and welcome into the Who's On podcast, part of the Sabre Podcast Network. As always, check out thesabre.com all throughout the football season and the whole year round for the latest in analysis, feature stories, and of course, the message board. And as always, follow, subscribe to the Who's On podcast over on Apple, Spotify, wherever you find your podcasts. And if you feel compelled, why not leave a five-star review while you're there? All right, getting into it today. Football is back. The bye week is over. We have games again to talk about. And we have Jackie Franciulli from 247 Sports joining us here. Jackie, it's a busy week ahead, but you had a little bit of time. You got some work done in the home office, I see.
Yeah, I mean, it's a work in progress, right? So we still got ladders up and we still got work to do, but half of it's done. I guess we have a little bit of bye week to finish the other half.
I know. Well, thankfully, we got two bye weeks now with the current scheduling model, so that's good. Busy week on grounds, though, coming up. Homecomings, football, playing Boston College, and you got the basketball scrimmage, the blue-white scrimmages with the men's and women's teams all happening on Saturday. So a lot going on. Almost was a little busier. I don't know if you saw that. It was such a strange email. You get all those email betting odds and stuff like that. And I just thought it was so funny that, you know, they were putting out odds on who gets College game day. I mean, you can really bet on anything now. And they had plus 900 for UVA and Boston College. And it seemed like a pretty big stretch at the time. And I was like, but I mean, you look at the schedule, you know, there's not that much. They end up going to a different ACC game, if you want to call it that. It's over California and Miami this week. But it was just some fun fodder for the week. Something fun to talk about during the bye week.
I mean, UVA has not had College game day come to Virginia yet. One of the few schools. So you think it's at one point they're going to come to Charlottesville. So I can understand why this one was a game possibly that would have got them here, just because of the way the ACC has been lined up. I mean, with Florida State, their season and how they're going, it's, you know, you can say the ACC is wide open and you've got, you know, two teams that, you know, have an opportunity to move forward in the ACC standings. So, yeah, I can get it. But I also get why Cal and Miami. I mean, I've been truly entertained by Cal Twitter since they're joining the ACC. I feel like they really contributed a lot since joining the conference.
Oh, I mean, the stuff that they do on social media with the woke Twitter and how they come at teams, like, that has been probably the best part about Cal, Stanford, and SMU joining the conference, is just seeing that on Twitter. So yeah, it should be an interesting atmosphere out there in Berkeley this weekend. But we got our own good atmosphere this weekend in Charlottesville with Boston College coming to town. A pretty intriguing matchup. You got 4-1 Boston College, 3-1 Virginia. And really some interesting history here, because Virginia is 1-7 all time against the Eagles, which is just one of those kind of crazy stats because of how big the conference is, how often teams face each other, that they're 1-7 all time and 1-5 since Boston College joined the ACC back in 2005. The one win came during the COVID season, nonetheless. So even a weirder element to add to this. Well, before we jump into this matchup with Boston College, let's take a look at the depth chart. First time we've seen it in a little bit, you know, since they had the bye week last week, coming off the win over Coastal Carolina, and a lot of updates. Probably the biggest update for a depth chart that we've had so far, just because of some of the injuries that we've had, and some of the guys that are coming back after getting healthy over the bye week. Probably the two biggest that we should note at the top here, Jason Hammond. He announced himself on social media that he's going to be missed the rest of the season with a shoulder injury. And then also Sage Ennis also got injured in that Coastal Carolina game, down with a knee injury again, and he will be out for the remainder of the season. And you got some names coming up in the depth chart now to replace them. Anthony Britton's going to get the start at nose tackle, which moves Jameer Carter over a spot to defensive tackle. And then Sage Ennis, with him being out, Dakota Twitty is on the depth chart now. So just quickly touching on those two, probably because they're probably more significant those of the weekend.
Yeah, Virginia has had some bad luck this season with season-ending injuries. I mean, Jason Hammond and Sage Ennis getting hurt in a non-conference road game at Coastal Carolina is a tough loss for them, because those are key players that have made this team successful in a lot of ways. Jason Hammond kind of came in as a freshman thrown into the fire because of injuries and grew a lot in those times. And he's been, you know, their primary guy playing alongside Jameer Carter. Yeah, Michael Diatta has come in as well, but Jason Hammond has been the dude for them. So that's a huge loss for them, especially coming on the heels of Mekhi Buchanan getting hurt on the edge. So right now they're depleted in numbers on that D line, which was a strength of the team coming in when you consider the depth that they were meant to be bringing in. So what you're going to see is guys moving in different positions. So Anthony Britton will obviously get most of that reps inside, but you're also going to see guys like Bryce Carter and Terrell Jones. Those guys might rotate in inside. And that's good. We also can see Ben Smiley, who's also played both outside and inside, kind of moving in. So you're seeing Virginia kind of balance how they rotate those guys to stay healthy, because that's kind of the key with Coach Rudd's defense, is keeping those guys healthy and keeping those guys fresh. So you're going to see a lot of guys kind of rotate and playing outside or inside. So expect Terrell Jones and Bryce Carter to have more snaps. And then when you look at Sage Ennis, I mean, you look at Virginia's rushing performances against Coastal Carolina, obviously the under 400-yard rushing, but you look at the other games where they've had some success running the ball. I mean, even against Maryland, you saw that the run protection was better. And one of the main reasons why Virginia's run protection has been better has because they reinforced that tight end room. Sage Ennis has been good at it. Obviously, the O-line has improved. But when you have tight ends and you can play 12 personnel, I mean, that's the reason why their run game has been able to be established. So that's going to be a huge loss for them. Sage Ennis added so much to them, and that's the reason why they recruited him. You can say Tyler Neville, who's averaging 16 yards a catch, he was a guy that they wanted to add on the passing game. Sage Ennis was recruited because of his ability to block in the perimeter and the way he blocks and the run game. So right now you're going to expect Dakota Tweedy, who just transitioned to a new position. And when you transition to tight end, it's, Tony Elliott, when I asked him about it, he said that, obviously the quarterback is one of the toughest positions. Maybe the center is next, but then the tight end is probably one of the top three toughest positions to learn, because you have to learn a little bit about everything on that offense. So Dakota Tweedy is going to be having to step up in that regard. Obviously, catch the ball, and they trust him as to catch the ball, but also he has to become that all-around tight end. The good news for them, they also have Sackett Wood, who also is a veteran and they can help there. But that is probably the biggest loss. Because you wanted to establish that run game, and they had kind of that, I don't want to say aha moment, but you saw the potential that that running back room can have. And then Sage Ennis goes down. So that's a tough loss for Virginia when they're going to the meat of the schedule.
Real quick on the defensive tackles, Anthony Britton just wrote a story kind of looking at Britton, because he's a guy, we saw a little bit last year, played four games. We've seen a little bit more this year. He's been rotated in there. And that's the good thing about this is that, with Red Cincy's defense, they have been rotating that defensive line a lot. So, the next man up has some experience and he has been playing a good bit this year. But, big guy. And it was funny because I hadn't watched the Green Mile movie in a long time, but Tony Elliott referenced it and I was like, that's pretty good. Like, that's a pretty good reference on the spot right there for Tony, because Britton, what you know about him, huge guy, massive, 6'3", 311. Guys say that, he's lifting almost as much, if not as much, as Jameer Carter in the weight room. So he's a big guy, strong guy. It's just a lot of potential, and it's kind of getting him to realize that potential. And now, they say like one of the best ways to learn is learning on the job. So he's going to have a lot of that, as they call it, baptism by fire. Good positive news on the depth chart. A lot of guys are coming back. Mikhail Boley, Tony Elliott said he is ready to go. It's been, four games now, kind of waiting for him to get out there. He is back. Ty Furnish will be back on the offensive line. Terrell Harris is day to day, but he expects him to be back by then. Chris Tyree, evidently, he's also healthy now. That one was kind of just thrown out there. Didn't really know that he was hurt, but real quick on Boley, just I was curious, Jack Whitmer, and we talked about his transition from tight end to offensive lineman, and he's done really well to start this season for Virginia. Now you bring Mikhail Boley back, who obviously is your starter at left tackle. He's the guy that's played a lot of snaps there. He has experience there. And I asked Tony Elliott, is there a possibility that do these guys have enough flexibility where, you want to get your best five offensive linemen out there on the field, but you want to do it in a way that they can actually play and perform at their positions? And he said, yeah, I mean, Whitmer's played some at left and right tackle. And so maybe that's a possibility down the line. But I think at first you get Boley back on the field, see how he looks at first.
Yeah, we actually spoke to OC Des Kitchings today as well. And one of the points that, it's been said a few times is that Mikhail Boley, although he's back, is still not quite at game conditioning, right? He's going to have to adjust. He hasn't played football a lot. I mean, he missed all the spring, then he came back. he re-aggravated that ankle, and then he had to sit out again. So you're also going to have to deal with game conditioning, which is why you're probably going to see Jack Whitmer more so than Mikal Boley probably for that first game. Like you said, you're going to have to see how he plays in the game environment and that, game rush. So, but I expect Jack see Jack Whitmer out there. And also what you've been seeing with Virginia is they have been rotating those guys at tackle. You've seen Jimmy Chris kind of come in, take a few of those snaps at right and left tackle in the game against Coastal Carolina, in the game against Maryland. So I could highly expect to see Jack Whitmer there as well to kind of come in there and help them in that regard. It's going to be an interesting dynamic is how do you switch those, because one of the keys with the O-line is you have that comfortability and then that communication. So how much do you disturb that when you're trying to create that? Because they've honestly, I know the O-line gets a lot of hate and a lot of flack, but this year they've actually been pretty okay. Yes, there are times where you're like, oh, I think Landry didn't have enough time there, but it's not consistent when you look at it. And I feel like some people automatically just want to blame the O-line, but then you watch back the tape and honestly you go against Maryland, for instance, I feel like the O-line got kind of thrown in there by the Wolves, but when you watch back they weren't that bad. And against Coastal Carolina, I mean, the last two games are, like I said, their run blocking and run protection has been good. Noah Josi has had a great game against Coastal Carolina when it came to blocking in the run game. So it's a tenuous balance that you have if you're Terry Heffernan and Dez Kitchens, making sure that you still have that good chemistry and communication while, making sure you're fresh. Because they understand the way the schedule is built and the way it's built in thirds, this third of the schedule is probably the most important third for Virginia. Yes, we said that about the first third, but then how you start. And then
Everything's
now
important.
it's with, yeah, I mean, every game is important, right? But when you look at it, now you started off great. You started 3-1. You needed to win at least three games in that first kind of group, right? Now you have Boston College. And I think on our first podcast, Preston, I said they needed to win 4 out of 5. So if they win this one, you're two games close to bowl eligibility. And when the last third of your schedule has 3 out of 4 road games, you're thinking this is when we secure more of the wins or most of your wins to get close to the bowl eligibility, because you don't want to be in a situation where you want to get 3 wins in the second, like the last third, because then you're on the road for most of them. So if you're Virginia, you're looking to get closer this third.
Yeah, no, it'll be huge. And going off the offensive line real quick, the UVA had this in their game notes. The run blocking grade for this team, according to Pro Football Focus, second best of any ACC school, 20th in the FBS so far. So yeah, they have made strides, and I think it shows there in the stats. I know Tony Elliott says he's not a big stats guy, but that's good stats. You want to see the stats go in a positive direction. Another injury note here: J.R. Wilson is gonna expected to make his debut, and if there is one guy that you could say was the de facto winner of spring and fall camp, it was J.R. Wilson, because every single time you asked anyone on the offensive side, even sometimes the defensive side, who was standing out there on the field, it was J.R. Wilson at wide receiver. He's set to make his debut and coming back from injury that he suffered during fall camp. And that's going to take us into our press conference rewind for the week. And here is Tony Elliott talking about J.R. Wilson.
It helps Malachi. From the standpoint of that's where he was at the position behind Malachi, and so it takes a little bit of stress off of Malachi from a snap count standpoint, and I think he gives you the same similar production as what Malachi is doing over there. So in my years of calling plays, man, whenever you had that two-headed monster, especially into the boundary with two guys that could stay fresh and they could just keep attacking, man, it really, really helps, the offense.
Really interesting stuff there from Tony Elliott on J.R. Wilson. Obviously, we heard a lot of hype around him coming into the season, and then, kind of taking a little off track with the injury, and now we get to see number six kind of make his debut for the season. What are you expecting from him? I know right now probably just depth and getting another body out there to kind of, not put so much on Malachi Fields, because I mean, we'll be up there sometimes looking at the field, and they got a wide receiver group of Eli Wood, Jaden Gibson, and whoever else, maybe Cam Courtney, the true freshman, and now you kind of get a little bit more depth, someone that has a little bit more experience than those guys.
Yeah, especially with Trill Harris banged up and going day to day, you don't want to push a guy, a little too early with an injury and then cost you for the rest of the season, right? So you want to balance his return. And, even Chris Tyree, he said he's good to go. But that's another one that you're considering, like, hey, you have a long season, right? You don't want to push anyone too far. So you want to give those reps to other guys. And J.R. Wilson was someone that was been consistent through spring and through fall before his injury. So having him back is certainly good for Virginia. I mean, you add him, Malachi Field, Tre Harris, who has been doing well when he's healthy. I mean, prior to that injury, he was probably one of the most consistent pass catchers, apart from that one drop early on against Maryland. I mean, he's been very good for Virginia. Then you also add Cam Courtney in the slot coming in for the injured Sadarian Harrison, who's dealing with a hamstring injury. So you want those scholarship players on the wide receiver to kind of help you give options to Anthony Calandria, and open up the offense a little bit because you don't have Malik Washington coming down that tunnel. Malik Washington was just a special player. So in order to have those type of returns, you're going to have to spread the ball to different people. You're not going to have one guy getting all those receptions and all those yardage. And then also you make defenses think where you're going to go with the ball, right? And I think that was the one thing that Des Kitchings did well in his play calling against Coastal Carolina. I know this is not really the question, but because when you look at the Broster House package where he came out in shotgun and you had him, Chris Tyree, and Xavier Brown all lined up, you made sure the defense had three ball carriers out on the field. So they had to defend all three. So when you have those wide receivers on the field, you have to make sure the defense are on each one of those guys. You can't double team Malachi Fields. So that is a difference. So it's kind of like, yes, it's great to have J.R. Wilson there because that's another guy the defense has to have a guy on.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and looking at that Coastal Carolina game, it just wasn't a good look at, without Trell Harris, because he didn't play in that game, and but they didn't really have to go to the air all that much. So you don't really know how much that would have hurt them in the passing game. But I have a feeling if it was against another ACC team, like you said, like they could key in on more on Malachi Fields, and so maybe he doesn't get open for those two touchdowns or, whatever it may be. And maybe Calandria struggles a little bit more to find guys to get the ball to in the passing game. So it is interesting, and it's good to have J.R. Wilson back. I'm very intrigued to see kind of what he looks like. And it's gonna take some time just getting back out there, getting your game legs under you. But as much as this coaching staff talked about him in the preseason and back in the spring, like you kind of want to be like, all right, well, what did you guys see? Like, is it all talk, or is there, some substance to this? Speaking of talk, Jonas Sanker, talking about the wide open ACC at this point. Virginia 1-0 in the ACC coming into this game, off to their best start since 2019 at 3-1, getting ready for another ACC game. Here's what Jonas Sanker had to say about this matchup.
Honestly, I mean, every ACC game is super important, especially with the conference we're in. It's wide open. I think, we got a lot of talented teams in here, but at the end of the day, this is a competitive conference, so everyone matters. Obviously, last year was frustrating, but we know what type of game it's going to be. They're going to try to impose their will. We're going to impose ours. It's going to be, who's got a better culture. So I'm looking forward to it.
All right, Jackie, wide open ACC. You've got Clemson on top right now at 2-0, and then other than that, you've got Florida State down at the bottom of the conference, pretty much. And there's
Like we predicted.
just like we predicted. Yeah, there's a lot in
Wow.
between there. But what do you think about just the confidence, or not even confidence, just being like, yeah, it's wide open. We're 1-0 right now. You just got to take it week by week.
I mean, it's kind of what I said at the top of the show, right? The ACC is in a very different situation than probably many predicted in the preseason. I think apart from Clemson and Miami, and even Miami, when you looked at how they play last week against Virginia Tech, you look at and see like, hey, there's winnable games here head to head. And I think that's even what we said during our preseason show. There's a lot of 50-50 games, a lot of close games, which is why Virginia kind of hammered it home. They needed to play all four quarters and they need to really focus on not, killing themselves out there with penalties and being, that's why they're the least penalized teams now. And I think that is the big difference when you look at this ACC. It's anyone's ball game. Now you're going to look at the schedule and say, okay, Miami, Virginia is probably happy they don't face Miami, but Miami is obviously one of the teams that are in contention. Clemson is a team in contention. I mean, Georgia Tech, the way they played against Florida State, we're thinking maybe is that more of a Florida State now than Georgia Tech? But even Boston College, the way they have performed, every single team has shown the potential of being a guy that could be in that top three, top four. So with Virginia, I like that attitude. I mean, what do you expect a player to say? We're not going to go for the ACC championship. I mean, that's if I go out there to win. So you kind of need that confidence, and it's good to have that confidence. It's kind of like what Tony Elliott says. You just can't go push it to arrogance, right? You have to make sure that you've earned your win on the field. And that's something that he mentioned, is like, you can have that confidence, but you still have to earn it. And I think the best quote from Elliott in that press conference is saying, we remember where were we picked during preseason. We remember what people thought of us at preseason. And we haven't earned any other, pre-approved preseason ranking, because guess what? We're still playing the season. So I think that was a strong kind of statement from Elliott.
Yeah, I was just pulling up that quote as you were saying it right there. What Elliot said there, he said, we still remember kind of where we were picked at the beginning of the season. We want to prove ourselves right, not so much everybody else wrong, but prove ourselves right. You got to have a belief and a little bit of confidence in that. And they took pretty great offense to that in the preseason. I remember, hearing them talk about it. And sometimes, teams will try to shake it off. It's like, oh, we don't pay attention to that. But they were like, no, we saw it. We paid attention to it. And we think we're better than the second to worst team in the ACC. So, all right, I have to play this one. This one kind of took on its own life on social media. Here, Tony Elliott
Oh,
was
Preston, giving bulletin board material.
Tony Elliott talking about Boston College, and they've had a lot of co head coaches throughout the years. That's fair to say, and they've always been a really tough team. They've run the football. They're tough in the trenches. They've had really good offensive linemen and defensive linemen throughout the years, even back when Matt Ryan was throwing the ball there. Like, they had good offensive line, defensive line play. So this is what Tony Elliott had to say about that same old Boston College team.
Same old BC. They take pride in smash mouth football. They lead with the run. They got a dynamic quarterback, which may be a little bit different than some teams in the past, just with his style of play. But overall, they want to line up and come at you, and they're going to get in there, 12, 13 personnel. So they get into some sets where they don't even have a wide receiver on the field, and they just come at you. So that's all I know is BC football, regardless of who's been the head coach.
Now, this could be taken in a lot of ways if you only listen to the first couple words that Tony Elliott says, but maybe if you read the whole context or hear the whole context of what he had to say, you might feel a little bit different if you're Boston College fans. And I only tease because this the same old BC kind of took on a life of its own with Boston College fans, when I tweeted that out there. And it was meant to be a compliment. Like, this is a tough team throughout the years, and this is exactly what you see from this team this year.
Yeah, for sure. It's always funny what kind of takes up a life of its own on social media. But yeah, this is, to quote Elliott, this is the same old BC. This is a BC that's going to be tough for Virginia. I mean, they showed it last year. I mean, UVA was up 21-7, and they had that Hail Mary that they missed right at the end of the half, and then Virginia obviously didn't play the last the half as much as they wanted to. So yeah, this is a tough BC. Like we started the show off, saying BC returned a lot of the personnel that caused them issues last year, and BC started off strong. I mean, they have a new coaching staff. Whenever there's a times when you have a new coaching staff, it kind of provides a new life to a team. And Bill O'Brien has kind of come in there, and Castellanos has said that he has learned a lot from Bill O'Brien, and you've seen how that's changed him as a quarterback, given him his confidence. Now, they're a different team of Castellanos under center. You saw that last week against Western Kentucky. But I mean, you can say that this team has grown. And some of the things that you saw last year, particularly against Virginia, because if you looked at the game against UVA that first half, we talk about Virginia hurting themselves. BC hurt themselves too in that first half. You see less of that this year from BC. And that's also from a new staff. So the new staff has done a good job with Boston College, kind of honing down and fixing those disciplinary issues. But for sure, BC it's going to be a tough team. Their running backs are also used in the passing game, and that's a challenge for Virginia and how they do that. But again, at the end of the day, for them, it really is about Thomas Castellanos. It's can you stop him? Because that's been the Achilles heel for Coach Rudd in this defense since he's been in Charlottesville.
I want to touch on real quick. You hear same old BC, and that's not a bad thing. They've been a very consistent program over the last, decades now. Like,
I think
you
they've
look at
been
the
bowling, what, the last 4 years?
they missed in 2022. They went 3-9 that season, but outside of like an off year every now and then, like it's very rare. Like 2015, 2022, and a couple years earlier in the decade, like those are the only times they haven't been bowling. Like they have been consistently in a bowl game right around that 7-6, 6-7, 6-6 mark, but pretty consistent team over the last decade. It is what it is, but we're going to dive into more of this Boston College matchup coming right up after the break. We'll talk about Thomas Castellanos and also a guy we haven't mentioned yet and is one of the best players in the country right now on the defense side of the ball. We're going to get to him coming up after the break here on the Who's On podcast. Welcome back into the Who's On podcast. I'm joined, of course, again by Jackie Franciulli from 247 Sports, and we are going to talk about this Boston College team a little bit more before we get into our predictions coming up in just a little bit. Boston College 4-1 on the season, got wins over Florida State, Michigan State, Western Kentucky, and a close loss on the road at Missouri. Kind of surprising game there. Florida State game, take what you want from that. Now it looks a lot different. Still, it's good to go into Tallahassee and get a win on the road. Michigan State is a team that beat Maryland that, Virginia played earlier this season. And Missouri is a tough team that's, ranked pretty highly in the country. So it's a strong schedule.
Yeah, and the Florida, it's going to be hard to judge the Florida State game. I think Florida State is a hard team to judge now when it comes to the ACC. Like I mentioned, Georgia Tech. But no, I mean, this is a solid win just because you are winning in Tallahassee. And it's the way they're winning. It's you saw against Florida State, you saw what Thomas Castellanos can do. I mean, they were running the ball in the middle of that Florida State defense at will. That was when I was watching that game, I was thinking, okay, I know what the matchup is for Virginia's defense that I'm watching. This is going to be something that I'll be watching for Virginia. At least when I look at this matchup this year, you can say like, hey, Antonio Clary is on the field. He wasn't on the field last year, which should help with the way Coach Rudd's defense is kind of lined up. And plus, I can't remember when Cam Robinson was hurt, one or two games. I'm not sure. But I don't remember him like when he got hurt in that game,
Yeah.
Boston College. But then also Dre Walker was hurt after he had his first career
Got the
interception against
interception.
Boston College. So it was a lot of moving pieces back then. But that's, seeing them and how they beat Florida State. No matter what you think of Florida State is what raises your eyebrows. And then when you look at, I know people don't believe in transitive properties, but they beat Michigan State and Maryland lost to Michigan State and then Maryland beat Virginia. So you can kind of see comparables in how they faced off against Michigan State, how Maryland faced Michigan State, and then how Virginia faced Maryland. So you can kind of hodgepodge your way and seeing how that matchup will work. So, and when you looked at, they had a close loss to Missouri, and even that win, I mean, they had a couple of false errors, a couple of things that they could have done better in cleaning up, and they'll let you know that when you talk to them. So, but this is going to be a very tough matchup for Virginia, and I think Virginia is favored at 3.5 right
I think
now.
that's what it was at the latest. Yeah. And
Yeah.
which is surprising to me. I know they're Virginia's at home, but Boston College has kind of had a tougher schedule and kind of maybe a little bit more proven at this point.
I think Thomas Castellanos' status is probably helping Virginia out a little more, but also because it is on at home. And if you look at both teams, you can kind of see where Virginia has a little bit more of the edge because I like Cam Robinson's him because you have Cam Robinson who does a good job, obviously tackling up the middle, but he allows James quarterback. You notice a difference with Cam Robinson on and off the field. When he was hurt, James Jackson was able to push forward. And because of the way you saw them play against Wake Forest and the way that Jonas Sinker and Antonio Clary play, I think they're able to get to Thomas Castellanos much more this season compared to last year because of the way they get their ability to blitz with Cam Robinson on the field and Antonio Clary in the backfield because you have two really good safeties, which is why they lead the team in tackles. So I think just the matchup is there better for Virginia than it was last year. I mean, last year they were still trying to figure out true freshmen in certain positions because they were just hurt everywhere. And at this point, Cam Butler wasn't even playing because he was hurt in that opening game against NC State. So when you look at Boston College, you go, this is a good team, but I think Virginia wins certain of those matchups.
We keep talking about Thomas Castellanos, so let's talk about him. The 5'9", Mighty Mouse quarterback, if you will. He's back at practice this week, so he missed the Western Kentucky game last week, which was a tight game. We'll talk about that in a second. Bill O'Brien said he's doing all right. He's back at practice. Grayson James was the backup quarterback who played last week and had an all right game, 19 of 32, 868 yards passing, touchdown through the air, touchdown on the ground. But a really tight game with Western Kentucky, who's a pretty good group of five team, but at the same time, it was a little too close for comfort for Boston College without Cassianos.
Yeah, I mean, he is the difference maker for this BC team. I mean, it's hard to going from your starting quarterback to your backup quarterback most of the time. I mean, Virginia was probably one of the exceptions where they're able to get an ACC win last year for Anthony Calandra for a true freshman quarterback. But yeah, I mean, Castellanos is a difference maker when you look at what he can do because of his danger that he provides with his legs. I mean, he's able to really go cut through defense and he has good vision of the field to kind of see where those holes are and takes advantage. You have to be so disciplined and mind your B gap if you are the defense. So I don't know if I want to judge BC from the Western Kentucky game unless Castellanos is in play. Because, I mean, we could just see like, hey, if James Grayson is the starting quarterback for BC on Saturday, then I think Virginia could win by two touchdowns. If it's not him, and if it is Castellanos, then I think, hey, I'm probably going to pick Virginia later on the show, but I could see it's going to be a tighter game. So that is the difference. And I think the Western Kentucky game, I don't think shows anything else but that, because if you don't have your starting quarterback, it affects everything else, right? You're not staying on the field longer, your defense is staying out there more, you're forcing more pressure on those guys. So yeah, it really did show that this team is built around him.
And I know a lot of people talk about his legs, but on the season, 729 yards passing, 10 touchdowns, two interceptions, just 112 rushing yards, and only one rushing touchdown. So, I mean, it's not like it's just his legs. I mean, he's very versatile. He can get
Well,
outside the puck.
that's the thing though, right? Because he's a ball, people have to defend both. So he's able to get the ball in the air because people understand that he's a guy that can hurt you with your legs. So it just adds a different dynamic.
And it freezes you as a defender when he gets outside the pocket because you want to go towards him, but then guys getting open behind you or something like that. But real quick trivia in the ACC, ESPN's quarterback rating, I'll give you number one because it's pretty obvious. It's Cam Ward right now in the ACC. Can you guess number two and three?
I'm guessing Castellanos is one of them.
You're on the right track.
I'm on the right track. I wanna what Anthony Calandra is three.
No, Calandra's further down the list, which has kind of been one of my things with this ESPN quarterback rating this year. I didn't understand it. And I understand it after like the last two games, but after the first two games, I was like, he should probably be a little higher on here. But yeah, Castellanos is number two. He has almost a 20-point margin between him and number three. Number three is Louisville quarterback Tyler Shugg.
That makes sense.
And then Castellanos is, I think, seventh in the country in this rate quarterback rating. So like he's a playmaker. He's efficient at it and he is good at his job. Like he is a veteran quarterback and he's playing like that this year. So obviously it's massive if he's out there on the field for Boston College. We've spent enough time not talking about him. He's probably the best player, probably the most feared player in this matchup if you're Tony Elliott, is Donovan Ezeruwaku. I'm gonna say that as many
Thank you
times as
for
I
saying the
can.
name.
Donovan Ezeruwaku, defensive end for Boston College. The stats for this guy are absolutely insane. He leads the country with eight sacks, but that's not even the most impressive part to me. He leads Boston College in tackles, and he leads all defensive linemen in the country in tackles with 33. He is a playmaker, and I'll talk about it a little bit more in a second when we get to our key matchups and stuff, but for Virginia, you got Mikhail Boley coming back. You've got Jack Whitmer, a pretty inexperienced offensive lineman. And then on the other side, you got Blake Steen and Jimmy Crist going up against probably the best defensive lineman in the country at this point.
Yeah, I mean, when you look back at the Wake Forest game, you thought they were going to be tested, but then their best edge rusher didn't play when UVA faced them. So you haven't actually seen them face off with a talent like him. I'm not going to attempt to say the name. Thanks for doing it for me. But
Nesuru
Isuraku, there you go.
Waku.
But at the same time, against Maryland, I mean, Jack Whitmer held his own against those guys up front. Jimmy Chris did struggle a little bit, but Blake Steen and Jack Whitmer did hold him own. I mean, like I said, when I look back at the Maryland game, I think the O-line got too much of the heat when it wasn't, a lot of it wasn't their fault in that game. There's a lot of other issues that that team had, and I don't think it was the O-line was the main culprit there. But yeah, this is, I mean, this is a key matchup for this team because you want Anthony Calandria to get time in the pocket to find his open receiver. You also want him to go through his progressions. You want him to go through his RPOs. You also want the ability to run the ball. So those guys, that matchup is the, I think, the number one matchup for Virginia to win for this offense to be successful. And it'll be an interesting matchup because, like you said, I think this is the best defensive end that they've faced, the best edge rushers they've faced all season. And you have so many question marks of an inexperienced left tackle. Although, to be fair, I think right now you can't call him inexperienced anymore. I think he's experienced more and then enough. But then you've got, Mikhail Boley's conditioning and how where he is with that. And like I said in the beginning, is that chemistry, how do you balance bringing in guys and out to make sure that they can still have that same playmaking ability without ruining the rhythm of the game. It's a lot of moving pieces, but yeah, this is a key matchup for the offense, no doubt.
Yeah, and Tony Elliott made the point, like they like to move him around. So it's not just going to be the left side with Mikhail Boley and Jack Whitmer. He's going to attack whatever the mismatch is. And if Boley's, looking a little better that day, maybe he flips to the other side, tries out Blake Steen, or maybe they flip in and he's going after Whitmer or Chris. He's a versatile player. They kind of move him all over the lineup. It's interesting looking at Boston College this season. They have 10 sacks on the season. That means he has 80% of their sack production. It's him. I know Tony Elliott talked about, they got some other good guys in the defensive line, but as far as pass rush, it's this guy, and he's found a way to do it.
I mean, UVA had 11 sacks last year, right?
Yeah, so he's
So, I mean,
already outpaced them for the season.
yeah, I mean, it's crazy how good he is. I think he's like number one in the country. So, yeah,
Number
he's
one in the
definitely.
country. And it's interesting, the top two guys in the country are ACC guys, because you got Anton Powell Ryland from Virginia Tech. He's number two with 7 sacks right now. And something else to note here is Calandria only dropped back to throw the ball 20 times against Coastal Carolina. It's not going to be one of those games. He's going to have to throw the ball more. They're going to have to rely on him more. Because let me tell you, they're not going to run the ball 58 times. That's not going to happen this game. They're going to have to actually go to it. And you look at last year's matchup, they were pretty successful throwing the ball against Boston College, at least in the first half, before kind of things went out of whack in the second half. So they're going to have to rely on him to make a lot more plays. And it was interesting asking Tony Elliott, because it felt so weird. I don't know about you, but we finish the game. We're normally like we go straight in, like Anthony Calandria is one of the first players that we're talking to after the game. No one requested him. We didn't need to talk to him because it was all about the run game. It's all about Xavier Brown. It was about the offensive line. We talked to Brian Stevens, the center. And so
Yeah,
it was
Brady
weird, just like,
Rosterhouse.
yeah, we talked to the fourth string quarterback before we talked to Anthony Calandria. And so it's kind of interesting. Just I wanted to hear from Tony Elliott yesterday. Just, what did you make of that game for him? Because it really was taking the ball out of his hands more, handing the ball off, kind of managing a game more, and then making the throws when they were there. And he came away pretty impressed. Like he thought it was a mature performance, and it was kind of understanding what the game needs in that moment. He didn't turn the ball over. He didn't make any of those bad mistakes that we saw against Maryland. And he made some pretty good throws on those touchdowns. The first one to Malachi Fields, and then the second one to Malachi Fields too.
Well, I think it showed that this team has the ability to adjust, right? That's something that you can say has been criticized by this team, that you could say, like, hey, they keep forcing something that's not working. That wasn't the case against Coastal Carolina. I mean, they noticed that the passing game wasn't working early on. So what they do? I mean, first, special teams and defense made plays, so they're able to adjust pretty quickly and say, hey, we're up. We're here. Like, this is really quick. Special teams made a play and we scored because it was a shortened field. Allowing that allowed the offense, one, to attempt running the ball more. But I mean, they adjusted. I mean, even with the Rosterhouse package, they realized, hey, we're going to adjust a little bit. We're going to do a little bit differently because we've been struggling in the red zone. Let's see what happens. So that is a good sign for a team. I know everyone keeps saying, like, what's the record has to be for the end of the season? And in my mind, it's not so much about the record, but showingly the progress on the field and the adjustments being made and showing the ability to adjust in game early, not into the halftime, but early, saying, like, hey, this isn't working, let's do this. But also adjusting how you attack the red zone. They clearly knew the red zone wasn't working what they were doing. I mean, they couldn't score 7 points in the red zone. So what they do, they brought Rosterhouse in and they did him in the shotgun and put this big 300 pounder in front of him, Jameer Carter. And that was something that they adapted, saying, like, we need more push. We have no depth at O-line because of injuries. Let's bring in our biggest guy on defense in front to help him kind of get that last little push in. So I think that is the, like, yes, Anthony Colandre had a mature performance. He made some good decisions of when to slide, when to throw the ball away, when to go off the sidelines. But it also showed that this staff was able to adjust in a game situation and also plan a game planning as well when they noticed something wasn't working. And I think those are the key things that I saw too in that game when you talk about like Anthony Colandre and not being, the big passer that we kind of expected.
Yeah, and it was probably the most surprising part of that whole thing. It was just seeing how quickly this coaching staff kind of adjusted to the game plan, but then also just the wrinkles that you talked about, the Grady Broster house, the Grady Bunch wrinkle that they put into it, taking the ball out of the shotgun. But I was even more impressed with, and I had talked about it on the podcast all week leading up to that, they had only thrown the ball to Malachi Fields in the end zone one time all season. They did it on the first red zone drive that they had. And I was just like, there you go. Throw it to the big 6'4", 220-pound
I
receiver.
feel if you have Malachi Fields, Tyler Neville, and now Dakota Tweedy,
Yeah.
like all these guys should just have their hands up in the air in the end zone. I mean, those are your biggest guys on offense. They're a mismatch nightmare for most DBs. Use that and use your physicality. I like that Malachi Fields is using his body a lot more and like fighting for those balls because if he doesn't make a catch, he probably will draw a PI call, which he has. So either way, it's a good thing for Virginia. And I think Dakota Tweedy is going to be one guy that's also going to help with that. And Tyler Neville, man, he just has the ability to just go get open. I know he probably would wants a couple of those drop passes back, but I mean, I think I've seen him even like on plays where he doesn't get the ball, when you're looking at the field, you see Tyler Neville alone. The man just has the ability to be able to separate himself and have a position for Anthony Colandre to find him. So I mean, Virginia has those big matchups that they can exploit.
Full credit to Dez Kitchens and Tony Elliott for making those adjustments. I mean, a lot of time you hear about not making adjustments, but you got to give credit when they do make those. Real quick hit on this key matchup when Boston College has the ball. I'll go first. Just I think the blitzes. We didn't see it a lot against Coastal Carolina. Didn't see it a ton against Maryland either, like we saw against Wake Forest. Boston College is second to last in the conference in giving up sacks. They have given up 12 sacks this season, and most of those are Castellanos. I know some people are like, oh, maybe they got blitzed a lot against Western Kentucky with a young quarterback. That's not the case. It was a lot against Castellanos. And I think it's some of the similar stuff that we've seen where, you got a quarterback that likes to make plays back there, throw some different looks at him. And I think, Rudd's been a little vanilla at times, and it's pretty strategic. He'll go full on blitz one week. The next week he pulls off and doesn't do that. And you're kind of sitting there guessing, I guess, as an offensive coordinator as you get deeper into the season. Well, what's he going to do this week? You got to get pressure on Castellanos, I think, in this matchup. And I'm really intrigued to see, where he's bringing that pressure from.
Yeah, I kind of liked what they did against Wake Forest in that second half. And that was actually something that the defenders actually talked to Coach Rudd about. I think Chico Bennett was the one that said in his media availability a couple days later, saying, like, yeah, we saw something. We asked him, hey, we need to blitz more. And I think because Virginia's defense, we've said this before, that I think their best unit on defense is their safeties. Antonio Clary and Jonas Sanker, and obviously Corey Thomas, but I think Jonas Sanker and Antonio Clary are probably your two best defenders on the team. When you have your two best tacklers in that unit, I mean, use them. I mean, try to get pressure up front. You're going to leave your corners on an island a little bit, which is what you saw against Wake Forest sometimes. It was like, I'm going to take advantage because you are leaving your corners on an island and take advantage of those one-on-one matchups. That's your kind of question. Does Virginia trust their corners? And you can see that they do. They true they because they do leave them on the line a lot more. They're going to lose some of those one-on-one battles. So that is a gamble and a risk of Virginia will take. But I think for this game, they might have to take that risk because at the same time, if you don't close those gaps and if you don't make pressure inside the box, you're going to allow Castellanos to run up that field. And that is definitely something that can is going to cause them issues. If you just look back at Florida State and how they play them, you don't want to make a copy of that. You want to put that pressure up there. And like I said, that having Cam Robinson there, and he's so good at reading the play that you allow James Jackson to put more pressure too. I mean, you can notice the difference. James Jackson has been able to get to the quarterback. I mean, you see him get to, I think it was against Wake Forest prior to the injury. You saw him and his ability when Cam Robinson came back against Coastal Carolina. You saw again James Jackson able to go forward. So yeah, I ex fully expect Virginia to blitz a lot, and I think they should, just because 65% of the plays were on the ground for BC. They were short yardage plays, and the way to prevent that is by stacking.
And you keep talking about Cam Robinson. I mean, kind of tailor made to be a spy if they choose to go that way with Castellanos, you know, someone that has probably can match him athleticism wise out there in the flat. Looking at players to watch, I'll go quickly. Who's your player to watch offensively?
I think Malachi Fields is certainly one that could win those one-on-one battles for Virginia. I think when you look at it, if they beat obviously the pass rush and the O-line is able to give Anthony Calandria time, I think Malachi Fields could have another over 100-yard receiving day and kind of lead them in the air. But I think because BC is going to defend him pretty well, I think that opens up things for Tyler Neville too in the middle. So I could see one of those two guys having a good day, especially because Neville does have the ability to, you know, he averages 16 yards per catch. So I think one of those two guys would be important for Virginia.
I think we're getting to the point with Malachi Fields. He's my player to watch for this game on offense. I think we're getting to the point with him where you can defend him pretty well and he can still make plays on you. I mean, the Maryland game, I don't think that was as much on him. I just don't think he was, you know, Calandria was really looking and trying to get the ball to him as much as he could. And you know, some of that is due to Maryland's coverage. But I think, you know, he's at a point now where he can just make plays. Like he was completely covered on that second touchdown he had against Coastal Carolina, but he just kind of reached over, doink, got the ball off the defender, and like it was a touchdown. It was easy. And I think that's just kind of where he is at this point. And I was kind of looking at it because the matchup last year, he had 5 catches for 88 yards and a touchdown against Boston College. Most of that in the first half. And then the touchdown was that Hail Mary that they had at the end of the first half. And so I think he's kind of shown before that he can play this Boston College team really well, and I think he's one of the best receivers in the ACC. So, if Virginia's going to go to the air more, I think he's going to be the beneficiary of that. Defensively, I go with the big guy, big number 90, Jahmyr Carter. Just we talk about this run game and how tough and physical Boston College wants to be, you know, run the ball up the middle with some of these backs. If you got a guy like Jahmyr Carter plugging that up and you can kind of show some restraint at the offensive line and you know, kind of, you know, not let Boston College just grind out these drives. That's all going to be because of Jahmyr Carter. And it's interesting the way they switch the depth chart. And we'll see if it actually plays out like this on the field. But Anthony Britton is the nose tackle, which was what Jahmyr Carter had been doing. And Jahmyr Carter is now the defensive tackle, which we'd think would get him more, you know, opportunities kind of in the gap and being able to not maybe have three guys blocking him, as we've seen his dad post so many times on social media, all the times that Jahmyr Carter's taken up three blockers.
Yeah, no, I definitely think Jahmyr Carter is. I always think it's funny to watch his dad pointing out those videos and how people key on him. But because of Jason Hammond also being out, there is going to be more importance for Jahmyr to get more snaps. He's probably going to play more snaps than he's ever played for Virginia because of Jason Hammond not playing. And I agree he's going to be a key matchup for players to watch for Virginia, but I think Cam Robinson would be my player to
He was my
watch.
second choice. So, yeah, I'm glad you picked him.
Yeah, I think Cam Robinson would be my player just because I kind of been harping on Cam Robinson for this entire show. So I felt
was
like if I
surprised if
didn't
you
pick,
didn't go that way.
if I didn't pick Cam Robinson, I think it would have been negating everything I just said. So, I agree. I think Cam Robinson is going to be player watch because I think he could be a spy on Castellanos, but also he's going to be so key to allow other guys to push forward and pressure. And his athleticism, I mean, when you remember, there was one big play in Coastal Carolina, I can't remember what, I think it was in the second half, where he sprinted down the field, was able to get the tackle before it became from a big play to a touchdown play. And if that's the athleticism that could make a difference.
Yeah, he's huge, and it's good to see him back and healthy. All right, part we all love, final score time. I'll go first because I actually wrote it down this week. Usually, I try to go off the cuff, and it never works out well for me. So I'm going to go 24-20. Just looking at this Boston College team and the games that they've had this year, they're usually pretty in the low 20s. You score a little bit, but not a lot, and they're close games. They're tough games. So I'm going 24-20. I always like to throw a couple field goals in there just because that's how this UVA defense works. They let you get all the way down there and then they kind of hold you to a field goal at the end. So 24-20, Virginia wins this. So I guess I'll take the 3.5 points.
So I kind of like your score. I just it's one of those things with this Virginia offense. You see the potential of scoring more than 24 points. And so like in my back of my mind, I'm thinking I can see them scoring 30 because they have that big play ability, but then they haven't faced anyone as good as Isoraku in the edge. So I kind of like your score of 24-20, but I'm going to go with 27-21 just to be a little bit different. But I
Yeah, I
am going
like
to
it.
pick, but I am going to pick Virginia to win.
I was also impressed with just kind of how they approach the bye week is, Tony Elliott talked about you have the thirds of the season. You had those first four games, the middle four, and then the last four, all separated by those two bye weeks. But he said it was a pretty normal week. Obviously, the huge emphasis was getting guys healthy because they had a lot of injuries, guys that were close to getting back, so you wanted to give them that extra time. But they kind of took it as a normal week. They had like the same themes that they have every day during the week. So like when they're coming back this week, it wasn't as much of a ramp up. It was more of just like kind of a slide to the next. And I think what he said was it wasn't an off week. It was just what he said, an open week. It was a week they didn't play.
Right, yeah.
So
And even
impressed.
Xavier Brown said that too. He said it was kind of like they half recovered, half already focused on Boston College. So they didn't stop, but at the same time, they were able to balance out helping their bodies recover from the first grueling couple of weeks of the season, but also use it as an attempt to, self and scout and also look at Boston College.
Yeah, because I think when you have a team that is building momentum early in the season, you're always weary when you get a bye week and you're like, oh no, you don't want to lose the momentum. But it seemed like it was the perfect break that they needed. They needed to
I think
come
the body's
back.
really needed
They
it.
needed they the bodies needed it for sure, but they also needed to come back after the Maryland game, have a game where they went out there won comfortably, just to kind of restore the momentum and be like, yeah, we're still going in the right direction, and then kind of take that into the bye week. I think it worked out perfectly for them. But all right, so we both have Virginia winning, beating Boston College. All right, well, that will do it for us here on the Who's On podcast. We will see you next week after the game, also after the Blue White scrimmage. I mean, should mention that too. So we'll get to see some basketball for the first time.
Oh yeah,
I know
that's
you
gonna be
love
a
it when
long
it's almost
day.
crossover season.
Yeah, no, that's gonna be a long day. I mean, I'm excited for basketball, but I would be dishonest if I say I'm excited to be. I think I will probably get at Scott Stadium at 9 a.m., maybe 8:39 in the morning, and then go from there to scrimmages. So it'll be a long day. I'm very curious to see all the new faces and the men's basketball team. And also the women's basketball team was able to get a couple of new faces too, some of the reclassifications coming in. So it'll be interesting to see how those guys kind of mesh.
Yeah, interesting year for both sides, but we'll get through the day from 9 a.m.
A lot
to
of coffee.
9 p.m. Lots of coffee, whatever you drink to get you through the day. We'll see you back here on the Who's On podcast next week. Thanks for joining us.